Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, Guy. Sad morning. I got a text from you last night saying that David Crosby had died, and it was quite a shock. And I knew it was very personal for you as well, because you've spent a lot of time with David. I think you've even been on holiday with him, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, that was actually the most magical holiday. That was with David on a boat around the coast of Turkey with David Gilmour. And which did have probably the most magical evening I've ever had in my life, which is sitting on the top of a boat under the stars in the ski with the two Davids harmonizing and playing guitar together, which is just, you know, beyond magical. But I first met him back in 1983 when I was doing this festival tour. And this was when this was in his absolute sort of darkest days of, you know, when he was glued to a pipe. We had this joke of where Ice House let him use our dressing room because it was the only one that had a fully functioning gas hob. And so he was let in with his Merrick chemistry set or whatever. But years later, when I got to know him properly on David Gilmour's 2006 tour, when him and Graham came and sang with us. And I said, you know, David, you know, I didn't know you back then. He went, oh, yeah, bad days, bad days. I said, yeah, but I've got to say, David, there were one or two kind of funny moments that came up out of it. He went, oh, yeah, just don't tell anyone. And I said, David, I'm charging people money. It was actually in my stand-up show at the time.
Right. Because I remember you there was a story about arriving with Ice House, wasn't it, and clearing out the...
Yeah.
Finding the right caravan.
Yeah, and but it was wonderful. But then, I mean, on the 2006 tour, which was just magical, one of the most thrilling and terrifying experiences I've had in my life was I had to stand next to him on stage and sing his harmony part to On an Island with him. And he did this thing the first night at the Albert Hall where he was standing next to me. And I was just like, because I said to David Gilmour, I said, if he's here, I don't have to do it. He went, no, you should do it. And it's like, oh God, I mean, it was like, you know, learning from the master. But in between every line, he'd just go off mic and go, you know, you're an amazing musician. I'd go, oh, shut up. And then he'd sing the next line and go, no, you're really incredible. You're really, really something special.
Is this with an audience?
And then at the end of the chorus, he went, you're still an asshole, though.
Oh my God. And it's the harmonies that really he's famous for, that because he had a strange way of harmonizing, didn't he?
It was learning his part, like learning that one part for On an Island was impossible because most harmonies are natural. You have a melody, there's a natural fifth and there's a natural third one. He finds this thing in the middle. This is why no one has ever sounded like Crosby, Stills and Nash. He finds this thing in the middle and which kind of doesn't make sense. I used to have mnemonics all over the place to remind me of what note I was meant to be going to. His things are like maths, like let the night surround you. You know, doesn't really sing well on its own, but then you slip it in and it's, oh my God, you know, that man created.
He's breaking Bach chorale rules all the time, probably, isn't
yeah,
he?
Exactly.
But he did invent a scene. I just want to just ask you as well, because obviously these are heroes to us, but how was it for Gilmour?
To David, he's a complete hero. You know, David has always had this wonderful thing he implies that he's having a pinch me moment as well when he's around people. You know, that's a lovely thing. He's the eternal fan.
Because also, you know, David Crosby was involved in the sort of beginning of American psychedelia, as the Floyd were here.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, with 8 Miles High and with the Byrds. Actually, you know, funny thing is, do you remember we talked about this? His dad was called Floyd, wasn't he? David Crosby's
dad was
called Floyd Crosby and won an Oscar in the early 30s as a cinematographer.
That's how he used to work on documentaries.
Anyway, we digress. But the Byrds coming out of LA, you know, really began quite two sort of things, really. One I just mentioned, psychedelia in America with that sort of 8 miles high. But they began folk rock as we know it and as it was called in America. And it was a marriage, really, of sort of what Dylan was doing on acoustic guitar. Because obviously their first single was Hey Mr. Tambourine, Mr. Tambourine Man. And the Beatles and the beat groups of the UK. And that jangly guitar thing.
Which then goes all the way through Johnny Marr and, you know.
But exactly. But I think David was never an easy guy to hang with, was he? Because he fell out with McGuinn, you know. Because I think Stephen Stills, who was playing in Buffalo Springfield, this is what I'm remembering from the podcast we did with David. He couldn't play one night, and I think David ended up substituting for Stephen in Buffalo Springfield, and Roger McGuinn went, you know, loopy about that, and
yeah.
I think eventually David gets kicked out of the Birds. So he gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the Birds, but he's going to get in as well for
exactly. He's going to get in twice, and. But he, there was some. My favourite description of him ever was Naughty Santa.
Oh, right, I can see that. Yes, exactly.
Because the thing is, he was such wonderful company and so lovely to be around, and very passionate about, you know, social issues and stuff. And you're saying in terms of like band relationships and stuff, there is a sort of trail of destruction behind him.
But
he brings so many people together. As well.
Well, that's his thing, and he does bring people together. But first of all, I just wanted to, because we've got some clips from our podcast that we did with David, and he's talking here about Stephen Stills and the difference really between what's to come with Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and what he was leaving behind with the Birds.
You know, so let's go back. So you switch bands. You go via Buffalo Springfield. You end up hanging out with Stephen Stills, and along comes this guy from England, from a band called The Hollies.
Well, here's how that happened. Stills was and still is the best singer in that band, and was writing back then songs that the rest of us could only dream of. He was writing For What It's Worth and Carry On and rocking incredible songs, just brilliant fucking shit. You know, Love the One You're With. And the guy's just, he swings. It's built into him. He can't help it. He swings like a big dog every time.
Vicious lead player as well, isn't he? Vicious lead player.
Oh, I mean, he's really good. He's economical. He doesn't go completely crazy, but he doesn't play. He doesn't have the too many notes disease. You know, he doesn't play flurries of notes. He plays melodies. And I fucking loved it. As soon as they heard him play the guitar, the way he swung, that's the one thing the Birds didn't do. We never played a funky groove. We played all kinds of fun stuff, and we were very good, but we never swung like that. We never played a rocking, real, honest-to-God groove. And he did. He could sit down with an acoustic guitar and swing you harder than any band you had heard.
So then, of course, we're looking at this is then the birth of that whole Laurel Canyon scene. What's fantastic, remember he was telling us that actually the hub, kind of, or certainly one of the main hubs of that, was Mickey Dolenz's house.
Was it? It was actually one of the monkeys.
Yeah, the Monkees were like deep in to, you know, where all that was happening.
Well, didn't he buy his first sailing boat off of one of the Monkees?
Yes, off Peter Tork. He got his first yacht from Peter Tork, yes.
I love that. But
Yacht Rock!
Yacht Rock, yeah. Because he was a big sailor right to the end. Did you ever sail with him?
I didn't sail with him, no. We were on David Gilmour had rented it. It was a very big boat with a crew, and we didn't do that much sailing. But you could see, I posted a couple of pictures from the holiday, and there's this incredible look of serenity on his face. He's just clearly so happy on the sea, as I know I am. But
you have sailed yourself across the Atlantic, haven't you?
With Rick Wright, yeah.
With Rick Wright.
But it's not about me. Well,
it's not about you. So the other scene, obviously, because now we've got Graham Nash, who was in the Hollies, who was on tour with the Hollies, who then suddenly hangs out. I think he's hanging out either at Mickey Dolenz or he's hanging out at Mama Cass's house.
Mama Cass, that's how he talks about Mama Cass as well, doesn't it?
And he
very fondly.
He then decides to leave the Hollies and hang out with Stephen Stills and with David.
With David,
and
yeah.
They form this kind of harmony group, which I think is sort of really them sort of hanging out at Mama Cass's house. But he also brings someone else into the mix, doesn't he? Because he said in our podcast that he'd had a trip to Florida and found someone.
Yeah.
Of course, I had gone and found Joni Mitchell down in Florida and brought her back, and that kind of affirmed the singer-songwriter with good words, you know.
I sort of don't believe what I just heard. Gary and I are sitting here just going, oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you discovered, really, these two angels of talent, which was Joni Mitchell and Jackson Brown.
I sort of found Jackson, too.
Jesus, man.
Jackson Brown.
Yeah, no, not just Joni Mitchell. He finds Jackson Brown. I mean, and this is what we've got to be grateful for. You know, there's also, isn't Eric Clapton somehow in this mix as well?
Eric, there's that fantastic photo, isn't there, of Eric Clapton just sitting. I don't know who's, I might be at their house. He's sitting and Joni Mitchell is playing. And you can clearly, he's a man bewitched.
Yeah, he is, because the Joni's playing.
Yeah.
I mean, not only is she gorgeous, she's playing in this funny tuning and beautiful songs. And Eric's sitting there thinking, you know, he had his moment with Jimi Hendrix at one point.
I was just saying, it's like, not again.
Exactly. This scene, you sort of briefly mentioned it, this Laurel Canyon scene and what was to come out of that. In a way, it does start with the Byrds, didn't it? Because they had, what was that album called, the Byrds album, Something of the Rodeo? Sweethearts of the Rodeo. You know, that was the first sort of rock country album, you know, and then in the end it crystallizes in Laurel Canyon with this whole sort of counterculture scene.
Yeah, exactly. So but it was that thing which then go, I don't know, Graham Parsons wasn't really connected with that though, was he?
Well, he sort of came out of it. And then that, and of course Graham Parsons then would have influenced the Rolling Stones and the sort of music they were making, you know, Wild Horses and all of that, which came later. But I remember David talking about Mama Cass, because Cass Elliott, because I mean, I think, you know,
great parties. Apparently.
My God. I mean, have someone done the biopic of Mama Cass?
No, I don't think so. No. Oh. Who died in the same flat as Keith Moon.
Really? Oh, really? In England?
In Mayfair. It was the same flat.
How does that happen? How did he end up in that flat?
I don't know. I know Pete had to be his landlord and guarantor. Anyway,
I mean, this is all great stuff, because I'm sure our Rock-N-Tour listeners will be letting us know. They'll be doing their duty as
Curzon Muse. I think it was number 8.
Wow. David also talks here about in this clip about Mama Cass and what she was like.
A great woman, really funny, really smart, and also really crazy. And my best friend, we were buddies.
Wow.
And I used to hang out there a lot, and I would take other people over there because it was just, you know, she had a very spiffy place and was sort of a great hostess. And that happened a lot.
What is it occurring to you at the time that you're kind of, this place is the shit and we are the shit, and this is, you know, just how special
you don't really know. You don't really know when you're doing it. You don't really have the perspective to know how good it is when it's going on. You're just grooving along. I will say that it was very yeasty, great art chemistry going on all around us, all over the place. There must have been, you know, 20 places where people were growing some new music at any given day, any given night. There were, you know, music just flying out of the air everywhere.
Another thing that's really, really special about David is that, Gary, when we had the idea for doing this podcast, which was before lockdown or anything, and it was a very, very different proposition, and we were utterly dependent on, if you listen to all those first few episodes, those are just good mates of ours who we went to on a punt in the hope that they would give up their time and talk to us, who were a completely unknown quantity as broadcasters. And David was one of those people. He was one of the absolute first. And I remember you and I in the middle of lockdown, well, the beginning, quite the schlepped through a freezing cold, raining out down to Warner Brothers, and sitting in a studio with a crackly phone line to America, and that's where we got this wonderful stuff from David.
And I felt the hairs on my arms stand up, because I know he was someone that you already knew, but I'd only ever read and listened to this man, you know, and watched him on film, and suddenly I'm talking to him. And then actually, you know, I'm realizing, you know, I'm going to love doing Rock on Tours from now on.
And also because so much of it is that, you know, it's so much easier to have a conversation when you're looking at someone. So much easier to read them. And of course, we were just on the phone. It was such a weird situation.
But I remember it being quite sad at one point, because he was worried about the lockdown. And I think he was saying, look, I'm going to be 80.
He was saying he didn't know if he'd ever play live again, or didn't think he'd ever play live again.
I know.
Which was very sad.
You know, I feel that we should catch up on Jeff Beck as well, because we didn't jump online then. And I think he was someone that you, again, knew through David Gilmour, right? What's your experience of meeting Jeff?
I used to bump into him socially quite a lot. I used to go to the Groucho Club a lot. He was really good mates with Peter Richardson from the comic strip. But also through David. So like, one of my favourite ones is being at one of the Gilmour's summer campfire parties. And we're all sitting on hay bales around the campfire. And David used to just sing loads of Beatles songs. And they'd hand out acoustic guitars and song sheets. And these song sheets got handed round. And Jeff turned to me and said, so what is there then? I went, oh, it's just assorted Beatles. He went, oh, no, Beatles songs are so complicated. but I did record with him. I recorded with him with Pat Leonard. We did a track. And I just remember, and it was just amazing. And I just remember being absolutely terrified, because he's playing this mind-bending riff. And you're thinking, fuck, any second now, he's just going to say to me, double that. Which luckily he never did. But I've got one funny, what's quite poignant experience. The last time I played with him was David Gilmour had a very small birthday dinner, and it's when he just finished building his studio in Brighton. And he'd invited, if he'd sort of thought about it, not really. The people he'd invited comprised a band. So he had, you know, there was me, Phil Manzanera, Jeff, but he hadn't invited a drummer. So we all went into the studio after dinner, everyone had a few drinks, and there wasn't a drummer. And Jeff said, oh, I can play drums. And of course, as we know, famously, Jeff came up with the drum groove for Superstition.
Yep.
Because which he can play amazingly well. It's actually all he can play on the drums.
Oh, I see.
It was like the sort of third circle of hell or something. Oh, I've got David Gilmour, Phil Manzanera, and there's Jeff Beck. But he's not playing guitar. He's just going...
Because wasn't Superstition wrote originally for Beck, Bogart and a piece, wasn't it? It wasn't actually written for Stevie.
I didn't know that. But I know that it was Jeff who came up with that original groove that kicked it off. On the drum.
Yeah, because the first time I ever heard Jeff Beck play, or even maybe heard of Jeff Beck, was, funnily enough, on a Stevie Wonder track, because Looking for Another Pure Love, which is on Talking Book. And there's this great guitar in it, and I think I must have been about 11 or 12 listening to this, and there's a bit where Stevie goes, do it, Jeff. And there's the guitar solo. Who's Jeff? So I'm looking on the, you know, looking on the record sleeve credits, and Jeff Beck, and of course the Yardbirds, and it all falls into place after a while. But I only met him once. I saw him play a few times. In fact, I saw him play at David's birthday party, which was rather extraordinary.
And beautiful. Yes.
But I met him, spoke to him briefly once. And it was in a box at the Albert Hall, where we were sitting watching you and Gilmour on stage. And you went off for the interval, and I said to Jeff, God, it's amazing, isn't it fantastic? And he went, yeah, it's a bit loud. Loud? You invented loud?
Yeah. I've got to say, actually, but he one of the most moving things I've ever seen in my life was that when Rick Wright died, his... wish was to he left his will to, was to have a party rather than a memorial, which was hilarious because Rick hated parties, and so it was basically the family gala, and Jamie sort of basically chose who they thought should play. Obviously Pink Floyd played, and because Jeff was one of Rick's absolute favorite artists, we asked Jeff to play, and he very kindly agreed and said yes. And it was one of those performances where he literally stopped time. And anyone who's in that room would tell you, you know, it was just magical. And he was worried that he might have ballsed it up. So he finished it off by going, sorry, Rick.
Oh, dear. I mean, the sounds that man got out of the guitar was so extraordinary. And I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performance with Stevie Wonder is the go-to to, if you want to listen, doing Superstition, of course, the solo in that. I mean, there's so much of his work that's out there. I mean, I think what was so shocking about Jeff going was, unlike David Crosby, who always looked about 90 years old, you know, sad.
Yeah,
you
know, what we did call it? Sid James syndrome.
Yeah, right. The thing is with Jeff is he always looked so young, yeah, and he was improving, and he was getting better. Yeah. Every time you saw him, he'd added something else. Well, and he was always so open to working with young people as well.
He had a great eye for talent. He was fantastic at spotting people. But I used to think of him, he was kind of like the guitar version of hip hop, meaning he would just take any type of music and absorb it and put it in. It's like, you know, Nessun Dorma, Danny Boy, nothing. Yeah. You know, nothing was kind of off limits.
Bark.
Bark. Yeah, anything.
Incredible. Unfortunately, we couldn't get to, we never got to do Jeff, which was
no. He was he was someone we had approached, and I don't think we were rebuffed. I think it just hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. But of course, you can hear that episode that we did with David a couple of years ago. If you scroll down, and you go to your podcast, favorite podcast, whatever it is, platform, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Just to say we're sending our love to Sandra, Jeff's wife, and to his family.
Yeah, and to Jan and everyone near and dear to David. We'll be back on Sunday, and so it's good night from me.
And good night from Helen.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.